we're learning Torah from the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, teachings from the Baal Shem, from the Sefer HaRivash, that's been translated into English, and just to explain things a little bit, to make clear. And as I've been saying all along, throughout these shiurim that we've been learning teachings from the Baal Shem Tov, that all of the students, all the Talmidei Baal Shem Tov, built magnificent buildings upon these tiny little Torahs, these instructions that we have from the Baal Shem Tov. And therefore, everything that we learn, that we're going to learn in Midrash Hashem from the other tzaddikim, you'll always notice, in each and every piece, you'll feel the presence of one of these things that we're doing, in every single piece. Because this is basically the outline of the Derech HaBaal Shem. The outline of the Derech HaBaal Shem. So, we were talking about davening, we were talking about simcha. We're going to talk now, for the next 2 weeks, the inyan of Avodas Hashem in the Derech HaBaal Shem, which I can't really explain until we actually begin to do it. So you'll see. Oh, no, these pages fell apart here. Nice. You'll see in a minute what we're talking about.
Another
one? Yeah. No, that's okay. Shocking. Good. All right, on page 73. Page 73. But before I forget, anybody who's going to come to the halacha shiur tomorrow night, bring the Gemara Ksubas, if you remember, to bring the Gemara Ksubas. So otherwise I'll forget. All right. We're going to be doing now one of the most controversial subjects in the Torah of Baal Shem. But because here in the shul we've been talking about these things already so often over 7 years, so it wouldn't seem controversial, I hope. But certainly for someone who's new to all of this, it seems a little bit unusual. And it's really one of the sites where we've been going in order, we've been leading up to this subject. In English, it's referred to as sublimation. And what it is in Lashon HaKodesh, we'll see in a minute. And we'll talk about it now, what it means in Torah, in Avodas Hashem, in serving Hashem. So the Baal Shem Tov taught, bear in mind, on page 70, the first page there at the bottom, the ones that are circled, those are the ones that we're doing, 87, section 87 from the Tzavos HaRivash. Bear in mind that in prayer you proceed from chamber to chamber. When a person's davening, in davening you're moving, you're supposed to be, if you're not thinking, if you're not trying, you're not going anywhere. That's just falling right out of your mouth onto the floor. But if you're thinking, if you're trying, so then your davening is moving from chamber to chamber. When an alien thought comes to your mind, you are expelled. Now, they don't let you in. If you're trying to, you want to go to the room within the room within the room, you want to be able to get further in this journey towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from chamber to chamber, from room to room. But if you have an alien thought, if you have a thought that is improper, that's inappropriate, so then you're expelled. You're not allowed into that room. And if you have it while you're in a specific chamber, then that thought could cause you to be driven out of that chamber. Because you are judged in every chamber whether you are worthy to enter. This is a teaching from the Zohar Kaddish. It's not the Baal Shem Tov's own teaching. This is what it says Beferish in Zohar. So in each and every stage of your davening, that's why the Mekubalim also divided up the whole state of Tefillah. So all davening is divided into different sections. In some of the Siddurim, the sections in a lot of the Svardish Siddurim and the Siddurim that are written Alpi Dari, the davening is divided into different parts that it's understood for those who are familiar with Kabbalah, and you're entering into different levels. You're trying to go into different chambers. And if there's a thought that's inappropriate, then you're expelled. You're not allowed in that chamber, and you can be thrown out of the chamber that you're in. You're judged in every chamber whether you're worthy to enter. Thus, if you are not praying with hislavas, ardor, or fervor, start to pray intensely. Without hislavas, without intensity, again, it's not that Hashem listens to every tefillah. Of course, the Baal Shem Tov and his students repeat that so many times. Hashem listens to every tefillah. It doesn't mean that Hashem doesn't hear. Hashem hears every single word that a Jew says. Not only that, Hashem even hears the words that you don't say, that they're just sitting in the heart. The Baal Shem Tov taught that also. The words that you don't even say, that you're feeling, that you're thinking, Hashem hears everything. But that a person should be able to move from one madrega to the next madrega, and that the davening should be something that could really cause a tremendous, tremendous awakening in all worlds. So you have to pray with the slavas. You have to force yourself to try to daven intensely. When you pray with the slavas, consider the nature of the alien thought. Now, the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh said that this is a very common concept that's found in the Baal Shem Tov's teachings, and this was one of the reasons that the Misnagdim, that those the opponents of the Chassidus were very upset, because this is something that was also in a different form, in a different way, was very much emphasized in the teachings of the false Mashiach of Shabtai Tzvi Yemach Shemo and his prophet, so-called prophet Nosson from Aza. And because of the danger, it's a true concept, it's found in the Sefer HaKadosh, it's found in the Shulchan Aruch HaKadosh, it's found all over. But because the Jews had so recently experienced that terrible tragedy of Shabtai Tzvi, therefore the Tzaddikim were extremely sensitive to this concept because it was so prominent in the teachings of the false Mashiach. The idea of lifting up, of raising up alien thoughts, Machshava Zaros. Shabtai Tzvi Yemach Shemo, he taught to purposely enter into alien thoughts, to purposely, that one should purposely engage one's mind in things that are terrible, that are negative, that are disgusting, the idolatrous, in order to be able to bring about some great cosmic event by repairing these horrible thoughts. The Baal Shem Tov Chas V'Shalom never said that one enters into those thoughts, but the Baal Shem Tov did teach that these thoughts will accost a person, that a person is sent certain, there are certain thoughts. Again, I explained this last week. That doesn't mean if you're watching television or you're reading magazines that you have thoughts that are inappropriate. That's not a wonder. It's because you paid a couple of bucks to get them. It's not or you bought a television to have them. The Baal Shem Tov is talking about a Jew who's God fearing, who wasn't looking at anything inappropriate, and keeps his eyes in the right place, and tries to keep his head in the right place, and learns. And then, especially by davening, he gets attacked by thoughts. Attacks, especially by Shemoneh Esrei, right? The holier the part of davening is, the more the thoughts. Kriya Shema Shemoneh Esrei, the most popular time to get crazy thoughts. Most popular time. So, that person, the person that has these thoughts, so the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh taught that this could very well be what's called as a Yerida L'Tzarech Aliyah, a descent for the sake of an ascent, descending for the purpose of rising. Which means that although you're going to have to struggle with that negative impulse that suddenly attacks you, there is ultimately something greater that can be gained. And what's greater that can be gained is that one lifts up something from the world of impurity and is able to catapult it, to bring it into the world of holiness, which is our main service of Hashem in this world. That's why we had to come to a physical world. Otherwise we could have remained malachim, we could have remained angels, and we could have remained in the state of being just souls without coming to the physical world. So if we're in the physical world, it's because we have to try to do something to bring about this repair. So sometimes a person who is working on himself or herself a great deal to become better will have crazy thoughts for the purpose of lifting these thoughts up. Even though the Tanya wrote already that we shouldn't engage in these things, we shouldn't focus on these things at all in our generation because we're already very weak. And he wrote that in his time, which was just two generations after the Baal Shem Tov, really the next generation after he was the student of the Baal Shem Tov student. So that means, again, intentionally to engage in such activities certainly is completely forbidden to people like ourselves. There's no shayla. But he says that when you pray with Islavas, consider the nature of the alien thought. That when you're davening, listen, if you're not davening intensely and you think about the alien thought, then what's going to happen? You become an alien yourself, you know, that's it. Then you just become lower and lower and lower. But the Baal Shem Tov is teaching that when a person is already, he's holding in a good place, he's holding in a good chamber. He's moving in davening, it's with his slavas, it's strong davening. So then the Baal Shem Tov said that one can stop for a second and consider the nature of that alien thought. Now listen to what he says, the Baal Shem. If it relates to evil love, next page, such as sensuous lust, bring it to its ultimate source, which is the love of God. This is what is referred to in English, in psychology and philosophy, as sublimation. The meaning of this is, and we're going to learn about this in a few pieces tonight, the meaning of this is that the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh said to it over and over, Ein Ra Yared Milamala, there is no evil, there is no pure evil that descends from the higher world. There is no such thing as pure evil that descends from the higher world. Instead, there's something that's very beautiful, that's very holy, but it descends into this world, and it enters into Kalim, into vessels, and depending upon the vessel that it enters into, so will it take on the qualities or characteristics of the vessel into which it's entered. So for instance, what the Baal Shem Tov is saying here is that if this person's alien thought is a lustful thought, a thought of something which is inappropriate as far as the machshavas, thoughts of man and woman and so on, these kind of thoughts, they're inappropriate, that when the person has such a thought, this is referred to in the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov as ahava nefula, fallen love, which means the desire for a man and a woman to be with each other, the desire for there to be an experience of intimacy, that desire in of itself comes from a place of holiness. And therefore, if it would be in an appropriate way, if it would be inappropriate in a holy way, certainly in our Torah, by the measure, by the standards of our Torah, it's a very wonderful thing. But when it's in an inappropriate way, so what happens in that case is not that love itself, it's not that the root and source of that thought is filthy, is disgusting. The root and source of that thought is very holy and pure. It comes from one of the spheres, ha'alyayin, is from one of the higher realms of spirituality that's called chesed. Chesed means loving kindness. The desire that a person has to be intimate with someone, that desire comes from the sphere, from the world of chesed. If the chesed is misused, if the chesed is drawn into a mind that is filled with ugliness, into a life that's corrupted, so then it will become chesed, which in the Torah, as you know, could also mean something which is an abomination. Right? Like it says in the Torah, later on in Vayikra, a brother who lies down with his sister, who has relations with his sister, the Torah calls that chesed. It could mean something which is disgusting. It could mean something which is disgraceful. But in of itself, that emotion is not impure. The raw essence of that emotion is extremely holy. It's ahav, it's love. It comes from the midah of chesed. It's only when it's misused, so then it falls into the place of lust. So what the Baal Shem Tov is saying is that one of the highest means of serving Hashem is to restore all these fallen midos, these fallen traits and characteristics, to restore them to holiness, to raise and lift them up to the root and source of where they come from. Let's see. There are only seven types of thought. That's it. There are only seven types of thought that a human being can have. That's it. It makes no difference what it says in any book, any psychology book, philosophy book, any science book. There are seven types of thoughts. They correspond to the 7 days of creation. Each has an erev, each has an evening, and a boker in the morning. Look at footnote 5. The 7 days of creation signify the lower 7 spheres, meaning the midas. We're not going into any Kabbalistic explanations, things that are not for this time, but everybody here knows that there are the seven lower spheres of creation, which are the 7 lower spheres that dictate all that's taking place within the human being, within the world, within the universe, within each and every one of us, every single moment of our lives, where there are 7 spheres, these 7 lower spheres are working through our minds and our hearts and in the world. And, of course, the different combinations of the spheres, like you've all noticed during Sfiras Omer, when we speak during each week, this is the first week of Sfiras Omer, the Midah of Chesed is shining very strongly, and then you have Chesed Shebe Chesed, and so on. And as we go through that week, the different configurations of the spheres that all relate to different emotional potential that's particularly available during that specific week of the sphere, and so it is during the 7 days of Sukkot V'chulu, and really every single day of our lives. So these 7 lower spheres that we're familiar with, Chesed, Gvur, Tiferes, Netzach, Chayit, Yisayin, and Malchus, when I say familiar, I mean with the names, or in the Davening, L'cha, Hashem, Agadula, Gvur, Tiferes, Netzach, Chayit, and so on, those, he says, just as these attributes are to be found in the realm of divinity and holiness, so too they are to be found in the realm of impurity and evil. So we know that everything exists, Hashem made the world in a way of Zeh, Lu'umas Zeh, Asoha Elikim. That for everything that exists in holiness, there is a force that stands opposed to it in impurity. Everything in creation contains sparks of the spheres, either of the spheres of holiness or the spheres of impurity. Everything in the world has that. So when there's a piece of treif of meat, something that's not kosher, it too, exists only by virtue of the presence of the spheres, but those spheres, as the word in Hebrew, as the Tanya explains, the word in Hebrew, aser, which means forbidden. How do you call a prison in Hebrew? What's a prison in the Lashon? Beis asurim, same thing. Beis haasurim. Someone who is asur means the one who is imprisoned. So as the Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya, that when something is usser, it means that it's imprisoned by the forces of impurity. But in truth, the root and source of everything is holiness. But at this time, if it's something that could possibly be kashered, it could be released, it could be freed from impurity. If it could be kashered. If it's something that can't be kashered, I mean, you could dip a piece of treif in boiling water the rest of your life and it ain't gonna help, right? So it's just gonna mess up your pots. So if it cannot be repaired, that means that there's a state where holiness is also is trapped, is completely captive. The release of holiness is called mutter. Mutter means when something is unleashed, it's released from imprisonment. So he's explaining So everything in creation contains sparks of the spheres, either the spheres of holiness or spheres of impurity. In man, the midas are reflected in corresponding soul faculties in two parallel categories. The seven emotive attributes of man's divine soul relate strictly to holiness, chesed, gvura, and so on, love of God, fear of, and awe of God, and so on. And the seven emotive attributes of man's animal soul, each one of us has a nefesh elokis and a nefesh bahamas, as is explained by Arichus at great length at the beginning of Tanya. In order for anybody to understand anything about Chassidus, if you're really interested in learning Chassidus, you have to go through Tanya a couple of hundred times. To really work through it a lot, to have a so Baruch Hashem, that's the beginning. Everybody has to learn Tanya to have a tfisa on the basic concepts of Chassidus. So the same way that the nefesh ha'elokis in the godly soul, the seven spheres or the seven midas of chesed, gevurah, tiferes, netzach, hod, yesod, and malchus, those relate to the holy attributes, emotions of man, the ability to love God, the ability to fear sin, and so on. In the animal soul, these seven attributes, he explains, which relate to his physical reality and pursuits, thus to the realm of that which is not holy or even evil. Chesed, love of material objects, or sin, gvur, fear of material objects, or its consequences like anger and so forth. So the nefesh of Bahamas, as those seven, again, everything that exists in holiness has its counterpart in impurity. So just as we have the seven midas in holiness that are guiding us through this world, so too the seven midas of impurity that are expressed through the nefesh of Bahamas, the animal soul, and its love for physical things, its obsession with physical things, its fear, the fear of human beings, or the fear of things of this world, as opposed to fear of Hashem, and so on. So now let's look back up on top. So that's what the Baal Shem Tov is teaching. This is a very profound teaching. That's these seven attributes that we've just been talking about, these correspond to the 7 days of creation. And in fact, each day of the week, by the way, each day of the week corresponds to that particular motion. Therefore, it's obvious why, for those who study these matters, it will be more obvious why are you connecting more easily to a certain midah on a Tuesday as opposed to on a Wednesday, because each day of the week is connected until it comes to Shabbos, which is Malchus Shabbos, the Queen, right? And Erev Shabbos is Yisayit, and so on. You work your way backwards. Therefore, each day of the week, there's a particular koach that's shining more than any other day, that's available, and that's more powerful than any other day of the week. Those are the 7 days of creation. Now, the Rebbe explains, the Baal Shem Tov explains, that each of these days, as we see in the Torah, is Vayhi Erev and Vayhi Boker. It was evening and it was morning. So Baal Shem Tov explains, Erev is an expression of Taruvus, mixture, meaning having an alien thought. The word Erev in Hebrew means mixture or confusion, Taruvus, right? Taruvus means when two things are mixed together. Erev does not mean when it's totally dark out. Erev means when the evening falls. And there's that time where the light and darkness are commingling. That's really Erev, from the word Taruvus, a mixture, or confusion. Erev is an expression of Taruvus that means that's when you have a situation where there is a mixture between that which is holy and that which is unholy. That means when you and I, who are holy, we're the children of Hashem, we're Jews, when we have an unholy thought, or we do something, God forbid, or say something, or see something that's unholy, so that's creating a situation of Ahi Erev. And it was evening. Meaning there's a mixture, there's confusion. And Boker, which means the morning, the Baal Shem Tov said, and Boker is an expression of Bikur, which means visit, or visiting Hashem. The word in Hebrew, Levaker, for those who are familiar with Lashon HaKodesh know that the word in Hebrew, Boker, is connected to the word Bikur, which does not only mean visit, although that's why it's called visiting. Bikur din. What does it mean, Bikur? What does it mean, a bikores? Bikoret. An investigation. A bikores is an investigation. Whereas Erev is a time when it's very hard to see things, right? It's that time of twilight. You're not quite sure when you look at something. You're not really sure what is it. It's hard to see clearly when there's the mixture of dark and light. That's called Erev. Boker means yevaker, ben tov v'ra yevaker. It means to clarify. The word in Hebrew, boker, means to clarify. It means to clarify. To have clarity. And it's very much connected to din. Din means to be able to distinguish ben dam ladam, ben din ladin. It means clarity, means to know what's right and what's wrong. Boker means that there's no mixture, there's no confusion. Boker means an investigation. It means to clarify. Like the days that the animal is prepared and is set aside in preparation for its sacrifice, those are the days of Bikur. those are the days where it's clarified that this is an animal that is free of any blemish and so on. That's what it means. That's connect. That's why it's particularly connected to the Midr of Rivki Imenu, whose name has the letters of Haboker, and is discussed at length in the Svar Makadosha. And that's why it means to visit. It means to visit. To visit means I'm connecting to. I'm removing myself from darkness and I'm going to Hashem. The seven types of thought. So now these are the seven types of thoughts. When the Baal Shem Tov said there are only seven thoughts. Each person has there are countless thoughts, but there are seven categories of thoughts. And there's no human being in this world who at any moment is not thinking in one of these categories. There are only seven types of thoughts. The seven types of thought are then love of Hashem. That comes from Chesed, right? That comes from the attribute from the sphere that's called Chesed. It means the attribute of love. That could, in its holy state, that's the love of Hashem. Well, the love of one's children, the love of one's spouse, the love of a mitzvah, the love for a good piece of a nigun, a chazanis, and so on. So maybe not chazanis, but that comes from a different. That comes from, for those who are familiar with chazanim, not all chazanim has strong. That's there's an andere welt for the chazanim. But anyway, there's that's when love of something which is holy, love is something that we're supposed to love, loving something and someone in some way that we're supposed to love. That comes from the chesed of kedusha, of holiness. Then you have, God forbid, love of sin, or sinful love. When a person loves something, but what that person loves is not good. So that would mean, to love something that's inappropriate, but that you shouldn't be loved. I, you know, for the Rebbe of Zushi, you know, he couldn't stand when somebody said that I love pepper. The Rebbe of Zushi went crazy. You love pepper, I love Hashem. How can you love pepper? On his madrega, to us, loving pepper is okay. Loving a piece of pizza, loving some french fries, you know. It's an inappropriate lush, and, you know, I don't have to explain. I think, you know, in America, we already know that the lashon of love has become extremely, extremely cheapened, debased, and cheapened. You know, and I'm always careful in the house. You know, I always tell my children if they like, oh, I love this, you know, something that they're eating. I love this, or some sticker. Oh, I love this sticker. I say, you know, you have to be careful. You can say I like it. It's better to say I like it a lot, or I'm very fond of it. Love is a word that should be used with great caution. Shouldn't be thrown around, because when it's thrown around, then it falls into the klipas. Love of sin means when love, the midah of love itself is very pure, it comes from chesed. But when a person loves the wrong person, or loves the wrong thing, so then it comes from chesed of the klipas, of the tum, of impurity. Fear of God is very wonderful, it's very healthy to be afraid to do an aveir, in a healthy way, of course, to revere and to be in awe of Hashem. But then there's bad fear, such as hatred. A fear, when a person is fearful in such a way of another individual where it leads to a hatred of somebody. Like Esav, where Gevurah and Esav was the son of Yitzchak Avinu. And everybody knows that Yitzchak Avinu was very powerful. Gevurah, very powerful Gevurah. The Midah Gevurah was embodied by Yitzchak Avinu. Esav took the Gevurahs of Yitzchak in a way that filled him with hate, with contempt. Because gvura, fear, is an emotion that causes withdrawal. It causes one to step back. It causes one to be, in some level, repulsed. In holiness, the tzaddik is repulsed by the thought of sin. Repulsed by it. It's not pshat that he stays away, he pulls himself away. By a tzaddik, to mention an aveira by a tzaddik, or for him to see something that's inappropriate, he's repulsed, he becomes physically ill. In its inappropriate use, the person becomes repulsed by things that are holy, Hashem Yirachim. Or he becomes fearful of silly things. He's afraid of this, he's afraid of that, he's constantly nervous. He's always afraid of what his boss is going to say, what this one's thinking, what does my friend think of me? What does my friend think of me? This mahalach, I'm afraid that if I don't dress like my friends do, I'm afraid if I don't use their language, I'm afraid if I don't go to the same show with them, or the same, that I'm afraid that I'm going to lose their friendship. All of that comes from Gevura. Gevura means I refrain from something out of fear. In holiness, it means I refrain from Averis out of fear of Hashem. In impurity, it means I refrain from good things. Or, Stam Narishkeit. Stam Narishkeit. People are afraid of, you know, they're afraid of this. I think we all lived through just this past week, this week ago, I don't know, maybe it's wrong for me to say, but the kind of hype and the kind of anxiety that people were caught up in with this Narishkeit, with this millennium, I mean, you know, what was going on? I don't know, because I couldn't care less about the whole thing. I didn't put aside one can of Pepsi, whatever they were putting aside. I don't know, water. I wouldn't put aside water anyway. But you know, people were already like digging. They were digging shelters, and they're on the havel havelim. There are certain safe precautions. It doesn't mean that a person shouldn't live a life that is taking safety precautions and so on. Of course, but not with to become a person that forgets there's a God in heaven. And all right, how does one know what's the right meat? Okay, that's something you have to talk to a big person about. When is it something which is when is it a precaution? You know, during the missile attacks in Eretz Yisrael, so Reb Chaim Kanevsky sitting on his porch, you know, reading Gemara, and he refused to go anywhere. He refused to go into any of the sealed rooms. So on his madrega, okay, the Chavis Levavis would say that on Reb Chaim Kanevsky's madrega, he's entitled. Maybe if another person, that would be above his level. Maybe that wouldn't be his level of trusting, right? Maybe he would need to take certain precautions. It varies with different people, how they live their lives in general. But being afraid of things that one should not be afraid of is when Gevura has fallen into klipas. When you're afraid of what people think, this is a very, very great sickness, to be afraid of what everybody thinks. Now, as you would like to do the right thing, but you're afraid, what are they going to think? What's this person going to think if I dress this way? What's this person going to think if I want to live a certain lifestyle? What are they going to think? This fear of what others will think comes from this type of a problem. And so it goes on. Good glorification. So then you come to the midah of Teferis. Teferis glorification. Of glorifying Hashem. Taking pride. Having joy. Taking pride in Hashem. In the service of Hashem. As opposed to bad glorification or self-glorification. It's obvious what that means. That one's entire sense of teferis, of glorifying, comes from the self. Or people that are obsessed with showing off their children, or that their children are the smartest, the prettiest, the best, and this and so on and so forth, which is an extension of this impure use of teferis. Having nachas and loving your children has nothing to do with making everybody nauseous, showing them your pictures day and night, and talking about your children day and night. That's a hispirus. That's very often with people, that's a way of glorifying themselves. They're embarrassed to say, aren't I the smartest and the prettiest? So therefore, they could just say, look at my children. Who gave birth to such a child? Such children come only from the two of us. So it's a hispirus. One has to be very, very careful to draw the line between having nachas, which is beautiful, and a hispirus, a type of glorifying that already enters into the realm of impurity. And there are much worse things than that. Halavai should only be our worst sin that we take. There's nothing wrong with taking pride in your children. Please don't make a mistake. I'm not saying, God forbid, you shouldn't be proud of your children. We have to be proud of our children. Many people, they'll talk about if you have a lot of pride of your children, tell your kids how proud you are. A lot of people, they don't tell the kids how proud they are. They just tell everybody else on the block. And the kids say, no kidding. My father's proud of me. I never knew that. If you're filled with pride, then tell the children. Because that's L'Shem Shemayim. That's L'Shem Shemayim. When you tell your children how proud you are, there's nothing extraneous, there's nothing outside of the realm of holiness when you tell a child how proud you are. When you start talking about your children to other people, then you're entering into the twilight zone of Teferis. You have to be very, very careful. And likewise with Nitzuach, the Midah of Netzach, endurance, victory. I mean, we could spend a couple of years talking about each one of these Midas. Obviously, it's not for now to go through each one of these Midas. But the Midah of Netzach, being victorious, certainly is wonderful. When you're victorious, when it comes to a project of holiness, or you overcome something that was an obstacle that was in your way of becoming a better person and a better Jew, that type of Nitzuach, that desire for Netzach is wonderful. It's awesome that you have a desire to be Menatzeach. You have a Yetzirah that you've been struggling with for years, and you're Menatzeach. And the desire for a Jewish person to endure, that means to be able to go through all the tests of this world and not to fail, that comes from the midah of Nitzuach, of Netzach, to be victorious. Netzach Yisrael lo yishaker means last. That's Netzach. Making something good last. The impure way of Nitzuach, of course, is the impure midah of Nitzuach is that I have to be better than the next guy. I have to be better than the next guy. I have to show him more. I have to show him up. I have to be better than him. I have to be Menatzeach. If I get into an argument, even though I know very quickly that I'm wrong, I'm nevertheless going to make sure that in my argument I'm going to have better argument than present better arguments than my friend, because I have to be Menatzeach. All competition and so on, and sports and other things come from this, are acting upon this midah of Netzach. And you could usually tell by one's sportsmanship or lack of sportsmanship whether that Netzach is healthy and friendly, or whether the Netzach is just a way of self-aggrandizement, making a person better than the next guy. That's Nitzuach. And Hoidaya, Hoid. acknowledgement, thanksgiving, and praise. Of course, in impurity, it means to acknowledge, it means to be able to thank somebody, to feel humble in the presence of someone who has done something for you. It means the midah of hakaras hatov, recognizing the good that's been given to you, and so on. That's hidayah in a positive way. Giving in. Hidayah means giving in and acknowledging to the one who's greater than you and thanking that one. In its improper use, of course, hidayah means bowing down to forces in your life that you should not be bowing down to. Acknowledging greatness that is not great. So if you hang up on your wall a picture of some basketball player who was a drug addict, instead of hanging up a picture of a tzaddik or a grandparent or a great-grandparent, so we understand that your haidoya, that you are acknowledging a koach that is impure, that's unholy, as opposed to something which is holy. That doesn't mean you have to have holy pictures on your wall. That's if you like to, yeah, but the idea of idolizing someone who should not be idolized, that comes from a negative use of haidoya. In a positive use, it means being thankful to parents and being feeling deeply grateful to friends who help, and so on and so forth, and being filled with words of praise for those things that are holy. Improper hodoyah means praising those who are impure. Ish l'fima halala, you know, you can tell who a person is by the people who he praises. But you want to see who he is, you can tell by who does he look up to. Who do you look up to in life? Who do you see as being someone that's great? Who do you look up to? You certainly can enjoy a basketball game, and you certainly can have a favorite player or root for a team, but then when it comes to the question of who do you look up to, who do you admire in this world, that's the test of hodaya. Who do you admire? When a person admires Hashem, then he's quick to admit, from the word vidui, which is also connected to the word hide, then he's quick to acknowledge and to admit, I've made a mistake. It's my fault. The person who is developed in the holy midah of Hod knows how to say, it was my fault. I apologize. And I want to thank you for being patient with me, and so on. The person who is not using Hod correctly, he will be filled with admiration for all the wrong people. And, you know, and he'll stand online for 3 hours waiting for an autograph from some idiot and apologizing profusely for taking his time. You know, that's where his apologies go. So this is the incorrect use of the midah of Hod. Yesod, of course, next page, the sense of bonding. Communication, yesod is communication. Mr. Shem, the next, with the Chevron school, we're going to be learning next, after the vacation, we're going to be learning about different professions that have to do with each one of these midahs. If you're drawn to a certain profession, let's say you're particularly drawn towards medicine, or if you're particularly drawn towards law, or if you're particularly drawn towards the arts, then it means that there's a certain one of the midahs that's strong inside of you, and you have to know how to work with that and how to develop that midah. If you're drawn to a certain type of profession, mathematics and so on, each one of these professions is connected to a certain one of the spheres and draws a person and pulls the person who is dominated by that sphere in a certain direction. Yesod means communication. Yesod means communication. In holiness, it means when a person communicates in a proper and holy way, a husband and wife in holiness, and so on. And all the whole meaning of Kedushas HaBris, maintaining proper separation, communicating with the ones with whom one should communicate, and knowing when to stay away from those who you should stay away from. Yesod means to be able to talk to a person and make the person feel better, to be mechazik people. Yesod means to make that connection. It's very much connected to Parnassa and so on. And the Baal Shem Tov does not go into Malchus, which is interesting. He does not go into Malchus, which is Kabbalah's all Malchus Shemayim. Why he doesn't, I don't know. But Malchus, of course, is the final sphere, and it means accepting Hashem's sovereignty over your life. It's not all-inclusive. Malchus includes everything. It brings everything together. It coordinates and brings everything together. And the person properly accepting upon himself, all Malchus Shemayim, making the decision to accept, to be on Hashem's side, to be on Hashem's team as opposed to the other side. And all the Malchus means, Malchus is connected to the study of Torah Shebaal Peh, Malchus is connected to davening, and so on. Okay, each of these seven is compounded of 10 aspects. It means within the 10 spheres, we're only talking here about the seven lower spheres. The three higher spheres of Chabad, of Chachma, Bina, and Daz, or or as it's sometimes referred to as Keser, Chachma, and Bina. It depends on the usage of that particular sefer or what that particular tzaddik is teaching or writing about. But there are these three of Chabad that combine with the seven lower midas of Chagas, Nehim, which is Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferes, Netzach, Yesod, Hod, and Malchus. And each of these midas compound with the others. As I explained before, and as we see during Sefirot Ha'Omer, they interrelate with the other midas. With every bad thought, one gives vitality, heaven forbid, to the seven nations. God forbid. Look at footnote 10. Evil thoughts and sins in general are not just failures on the part of man. It's not just that I botched up. If I have a wrong thought, if I do something that's wrong, it's not just that I made a mistake. It's my own little personal private thing. I didn't bother anybody. This is something you'll hear all the time in the secular world, that a person can do the most depraved thing on earth, and as long as he doesn't hurt anybody, say, hey, it's not, did I hurt anybody? Hey, am I bothering anybody? Or in the Lashon of Tumah, we're two consenting adults. Yeah. Or now, it's a consenting child, you'll hear too. Right? By the Tumah in the world of impurity. So, I'm not hurting anybody. There's no such concept in Yiddishkeit, I'm not hurting anybody. If you're hurting yourself, you're hurting the entire galaxy. There's no such thing that you're not hurting anybody but yourself. It's just me, it's just myself. I'm not bothering you. Did I steal from you? I didn't hurt anybody. Did I murder anyone? These are the common outcries of people who are accused of things that are wrong and justify these things as only affecting them and no one else. They have a cosmic effect. I'm reading the footnote 10. They have a cosmic effect of strengthening, infusing vitality into the seven attributes of the realm of Klipa. The seven nations of the earthly inhabitants of the Holy Land signify these seven attributes of the realm of impurity. The seven nations that occupied Eretz Yisrael that we had to conquer when we came into Eretz Yisrael, Yehoshua. Those seven nations of impurity, Achiti, Amari, and so on, that we're familiar with from Tanakh, those seven nations are the seven impure uses of the seven spheres of the seven lower midas. And therefore, any time in our lives when we give in an impure way to one of those seven attributes, we are infusing vitality into that nation. And that nation means a certain koach of impurity that exists mamish in this physical world, not just in the realm of theory or so on. Therefore, look up inside. Medrash, just finish. I have to be at a very important meeting, and we started at 8 o'clock, so I'm going to try to end this in 5 minutes. But let's just finish this. Let's do one. And the Medrash Hanelam in Zohar Kodesh thus states: when Hashem created the world, it was wavering to and fro. The Holy One, blessed is He, then said that Avraham, the attribute of love, will come forth into the world. In other words, the world, Hashem made the world in such a way where it was like in a crisis. Therefore, each day of creation there was a crisis. There was the struggle between the sun and the moon. There was the struggle that the tree wanted it to have the same taste as the fruit, and so on. The higher waters and the lower waters. If you look every single day of creation until Shabbos, every day there was a problem. There's something going on every single day, and therefore there was a certain danger. There was a crisis that took place each and every day. So Hashem says to bring Avraham. Avraham, of course, is the letters Bihi Baram. In creation is the letters Bi Avraham. Avraham's name is Bihi Baram, means creation, which is the attribute of love, will come forth into the world. Ultimately, the world, the greatest act of love that ever took place was creation. Creation is altruistic love. Hashem reaching out towards the world, and this world that would so mistreat him and abuse him, kivyoch. But Hashem created the world, as it says in Pasuk, Olam Chesed Yibon. Hashem created the world, He built the world with Chesed, the Midah of Chesed, which is Avraham Avinu. But when you have the Midah of Chesed in the world, of loving kindness, which is Avraham in the world, then you also have, coming forth into the world, there will also be the issue of Yishmael, which means the attribute of bad love. Yishmael is called a Pera Adam, a wild man. The wildness of Yishmael means he loves everybody. It's the 60s, the 70s, right? You love everybody. You're open to anything. You're cool, that's cool. Everybody can say anything they want, that's good. I like that. Why don't you try this, try that. Everything is good. Yishmael's a Pera Adam, a Pera Adam. Everything is good. He loves everybody. He's a love child. He's a love child. Loves everybody. Loves everything. He's ready to try anything. It's a Pera Adam. Uncontrolled love. Uncontrolled affection. This is the world of Yishmael. This is the world of Yishmael that came forth from the unbridled chesed of Avraham. There's the danger of Yishmael. Each one of the Midas has told us. Each one of the others has children. And Avraham Avinu, when they came into the world, holy love, they came into the world the attribute of bad love. A thought of bad love, therefore, gives vitality to Yishmael. So if I have an improper thought of love, if I'm thinking of an improper love, then what I'm doing is I'm giving vitality to Yishmael. Right? So you're wondering, you're reading the newspapers, you're thinking that everything that happens between the Jews and the children of Yishmael all depends upon a couple of people that are sitting someplace in West Virginia. Huh? It's not true. What could we do? What could a Jew do to make things better? What could it not? I don't mean necessarily to make peace. Not from that school, personally. But what can we do to distance ourselves from the world of Yishmael? And what can we do to have nitzach and victory over the impure world of Yishmael? That's not something that's necessarily going to be resolved with a Jew and an Arab sitting over a piece of tray for food together somewhere in West Virginia. But it's resolved in the struggles of a Jew within his own little house and his own little heart. Whenever he tears himself away from inappropriate love and he draws himself into love that's pure, that's holy, he's strengthening chesed of Avram, he's weakening the chesed, the impure love of Yishmael. So that's what it means. A thought of bad love therefore gives vitality to Yishmael and the nine aspects that go with him. It's scary because Yishmael sleeps with him, the other ten, all ten spheres in impurity. There is also Yitzchak, meaning the attribute of good fear. And correspondingly Esav, the attribute of bad fear, which means murder. A thought of bad fear, the next page. A thought of bad fear, therefore, gives vitality to Esav, and the nine aspects that go with him, heaven forbid. So if a person enters into the realm of bad fear, meaning a fear that has fallen into impurity, when you're really terrified of someone, you're even prepared to kill that person. You're prepared to even kill the person. Esav is the prototype of all murderers. He's the koach of murder, he's the koach of anger. To be angry comes from Esav. Angry, when a person becomes angry, unless you're angry at a Russia, but if you become angry, stam, whatever, angry. The moment that you have that anger, you're giving vitality and life to the world of Esav. Someone might come along with handcuffs and lock you up for murdering somebody someplace else in the world, that you caused that murder. It's a scary thought. But you're infusing energy, very powerful energy, into the world of Esav. That's what happens when a person gets angry. No one heard it outside the house. Baruch Hashem, it was the winter. The windows are closed. Storm windows. Nobody heard. But that anger empowers Esav. The world of Esav. That midah of Esav in the world. Now, how to repair this? How to correct this? What is the avodah and the derech of the Baal Shem Tov? How we go about fixing all of this to come back to the root and source of all the midahs? That's something that Amir Hashem we're going to begin to discuss next week.